took her back to the hell where I was. He wiped at his eyes. There's no air there. There's no air she can breathe. I'm afraid she's dead. Well, maybe not. Derek caught his arm. We brought the oxygen gear. We can go after her. Try to find where she is and help her if we can. If your key can take us through. He cringed again. Of course. He picked up the beer and got stiffly to his feet. If we can. He stood a moment, staring blankly down at the old waterhole. If we can, he muttered again and shook his head. If she's alive. He shivered. I loved her. She found me shoveling dirt at Kubifora. She helped get me to college on the track scholarship. She brought me back to Africa to work with her on two more summer digs. She gave me a life. He turned his head to hide his tears. The western sun was already low, and the day had been exhausting. We could have rested and prepared for an early morning start, but nobody spoke of that. We uncrated three of the oxygen units and found the manuals. Printed in French and Arabic, they were brief and cryptic, but Ram deciphered them. We got the units assembled and tried them on. The smoke hoods had a sharp plastic stink and made vision difficult. No matter, Derek's muffled voice was hard to hear. Not if they keep us alive. Ram asked how long the oxygen would last. Depends on demand, Derek told him. I hope it's long enough. To overtake those hopping things? Ram took off the hood, wiped sweat off his forehead, shook his head. We'll never find Lupe alive. Not in the place where I was. We can look, Derek said. If those trilithons are terminal gates... His voice trailed off, but he caught his breath and went on. We'll go where we can. Learn what we can. Help Lupe if we can. Let's get on with it. I longed for the comfort of a weapon, but airport security had forbidden knives or guns. We went empty-handed, but the oxygen cylinders themselves made heavy burdens. We wore canteens of water clipped to our belts. I had a light backpack stuffed with a flashlight, spare batteries, a jacket, and not much else. We ate a quick meal and set out for the megaliths. Ram led the way, grimly silent under the smoke hood. I plodded after him, sweating, half sick from the stink of the smoke hood, thinking wistfully of spring registration only 2 weeks away. Derek was exuberant. Don't count the odds. Win or lose, this is the greatest game men ever played. Ram went ahead, eyes on the hopper's footprints. They looked like the tracks of gigantic two-toed birds, pressed deep into the sand and spaced perhaps 40 yards apart. He stopped us near the megaliths, pushed ahead to inspect the sand around them. The things came out on the west side, he said. Went back on the east. No tracks go anywhere else. They did take her through. He stood between us at the end of the hopper trail, the setting sun a blinding glare on our goggles. My heart was pounding. He seized my arm. Moja. He'd been giving us Swahili lessons. Huskily he whispered the numbers. Mbili. Tatu. He gripped my arm so hard it hurt. Nenda. Go. We stepped forward together. The sun was gone. My ears clicked. The sand crumbled under me. The sudden surge of gravity dragged me down into darkness. Chapter 4. For a few seconds, the darkness was total. Feet first, I slid down a rubble slope that melted under me. Light came back, a dull red gloom. I came down hard on flat stone. Ram let go of my arm. Under the weight of the oxygen cylinders, I staggered for balance and tried to get my breath. I felt nauseated with the smoke hood's plastic reek. Wapi? Ram gasped. Where are we? I turned to look back. The two great megaliths stood where they had been. Or were they really still the same? Giddy for a moment, I wondered. They were far taller, the sand gone from around them. The fallen lintel stone lay back in place. Beyond them, sand dunes and sunlight had vanished. Instead, I saw a dark creation of fire and violence. Flame-red clouds hung low over dead black lavas. We three huddled close together, shut in by the 7 great trilithons. Towering all around us, they felt like the walls of a nightmare prison. The lavas beyond were a black-fanged desert, flows of it frozen on older flows, twisted into monstrous gouts, cut with bottomless crevasses. Great boulders were scattered across it and shattered ejecta from volcanic explosions. Jagged mountains in the distance rose into a roof of fire-colored cloud. I felt wrenched with a sick distress for Loopy when I tried to imagine what she must have felt when that nightmare thing snatched her out of the dig. Dazed by the shock of it, I longed for the campus, the classroom, for anything familiar. All I saw was Little Mama's hell. Derek stood a long time scanning it and finally raised the little camera slung from his neck. "It's not the Sahara." Cooler than I was, he spoke as if dictating research notes. "A waterless world. No river channels, no sign of water erosion." He snapped a picture and looked at Ram. "A wonder you got out. The atmosphere is likely nitrogen, maybe mixed with carbon dioxide and sulfur gases. Can't guess what the clouds are, but they don't make rain." He frowned again at that dark wilderness and turned to me. "Without water, there's no green life. No photosynthesis to liberate free oxygen. If this is really the sort of interworld terminal I think it must be, the site may have been selected to make a trap for trespassers. Nobody gets through without the right gear."
"A lot have failed."
Ram was pointing across the thick, dark dust on the floor inside the trilithons. I saw the white gleam of a human skull. He kicked at a ridge and stooped to pick up the long horn of an oryx. Stirring the dust with that, he uncovered bones, an impala's skull with the graceful horns still attached, the skeleton of what he said had been a dog or wolf, the remains of something larger, perhaps a lion.
"We need Lupe with us." He picked up the human skull. "She would know, but this must be Cro-Magnon, an unlucky guy that fell into the trap maybe 30,000 years ago."
Careful with it, he laid it back in the dust. Derek pushed ahead to find another skull that Ram said was Neanderthal, and then a third that looked more modern. Ram dug into the dust around it and uncovered a bit of flint that he studied under the lenses of his smoke hood.
"A Clovis point." His head shook under the smoke hood. "Like those from our own Blackwater dig, it's the right length for a spear point. Double-edged, fluted from the base to hold the haft. Beautiful work."
He held it for us to see. "Clovis?" Derek was incredulous. How did it get here?"
"Lupe would die to know. She'd wonder if the first Americans came through here."
"That's hard to believe." Derek peered at it. "It's a far hop from here to Alaska."
"A farther hop back to New Mexico."
Ram stood a moment gazing around us at the great trilithons and the dark desolation beyond them. His voice fell.
"If we do get back."
We walked on till Ram stopped to look at a long pile of older, stranger bones buried under a thicker blanket of dust. Rib cages, backbones, leg bones, most of them puzzling even to him. Empty eye sockets mocked us from a sharp-crested skull the size of a car. A white thigh bone was 4 feet long. I felt chilled with the sense of the trilithons as a vast temple of death, dead and abandoned for many millennia. Could Lupe's kidnappers be its custodians, somehow here to haunt it? Shivering from too many of those cold unknowns, I longed for the little riddles of Shakespeare's life, for Christopher Marlowe, Boswell, and Dr. Johnson, even the dull toil of freshman comp.
"Look there!"
His voice suddenly sharp. Derek pointed and called to Ram.
"This was your little mama's temple of bones. She came through here."
I saw a line of footprints in the dust, prints of small, bare human feet. Left a lifetime ago on this lifeless world, they looked fresh as yesterday. They led toward the trilithon behind us. We followed them back the way they had come across that strange boneyard. I jumped when Ram grabbed my arm, pointing silently. I saw a deep depression in the dust that blotted out Little Mama's footprints. It might have been made by the foot of a gigantic, two-toed chicken.
"The thing," he shouted at my ear, his voice muffled in the hood. "The thing what took Lupe."
Farther on, we found another great two-toed track, and then a third. Following the same line as Little Mama's footprints, they led straight toward the opposite trilithon. I saw Lupe's wide-brimmed field hat, and then her sandals dropped yards apart.
"She was alive,"
Ram's hoarse whisper was hard to hear,
"struggling to get away."
We followed that double trail, Little Mama's coming in, and those great two-toed feet departing to its end between the immense black columns of the trilithon. Beyond them, all I saw was that jungle of frozen lava where nothing could ever walk.
"The gate."
Something in Ram's tone sent ice down my spine.
"A thing carried her through to Little Mama's hell."
We huddled there. Derek found his camera and leaned for a shot of that last gigantic footprint. Ram seized his arm.
"Lupe's alive. Somewhere."
He gestured at the black lava flow beneath those lurid red-lit clouds.
"We've got to follow. If we can."
Once more we stood close together, side by side at the end of the trail. I gripped Ram's muscular arm. He counted again, this time in ringing American English. I caught my breath, stepped forward with them, felt nothing at all. No change in air pressure, no tug or lift from another planet's gravity. Ahead of us, the tortured lavas were still frozen into the same grotesque monsters. The bleak landscape beyond sloped down into the same dark canyon. I saw no possible path ahead. Behind us, the trilithons stood where they had been forever, enormous against the low red sky, the only evidence that anything alive had ever been here.
What sort of life had the builders been?
I felt almost afraid to know.
"If that's another gate, that's the wrong key."
Derek made a dismal shrug.
"We'll never find her."
We stumbled back inside the trilithons as if they could offer any shelter from that dark hostility. Derek stopped to peer at us through the smoke mask.
"What now? What do you think?"
"Let's get out."
Ram crouched away from the empty gateway where the trail had ended.
"Well, we can."
"Not yet."
Derek glanced at his oxygen gauge.
"We have time left. What we've found is a fabulous pot if we get back with it."
I was looking back the way we had come. He frowned at me anxiously.
"Can't you get what it means? Not just for us, not just for Lupe. It's new science. It's a new universe. I don't understand. We've got to get back with every fact we can."
"We could lose it all."
Muffled in the smoke mask, Ram's voice was grim.
"In half a minute if those monsters come back."
"Or even if they don't."
Derek had sobered. "We need Lupe's expertise to interpret what we've found. Her reputation to land another grant. If we get back without her..." His head shook.
"We could be accused of inventing the whole story to cover something up."
Ram shrugged. "I see no way to go on."
"Okay." Derek turned back to the bones. "But we've got to take what we can to convince people."
"Get out of quick," Ram muttered. "Something else could be collecting our own bones 10,000 years from now."
Watching the oxygen gauges, we got at it. Derek photographed us standing in the trilithons to prove their size. He photographed the red-lit lavascape around us. He photographed the long pile of skeletons. He made us pose beside that monstrous skull and that huge leg bone. Ram tried to hurry him. Scratching in the dust around the human skeletons, we found an odd-shaped stone Ram said was a hand axe, and shards of a pottery vessel that could have been a water jar. He brushed the dust off the Neanderthal human skull, and then an egg-shaped shell about the same size. A pale yellow color, it had two short horns and two empty hollows that could have been eye sockets.
"Nothing human, or even kin to human."
He turned it in his hands and shook his head. "Silicon, I think. Like what Lupe called an exoskeleton. Maybe from one of the things that built the place?" He grinned and handed it to me. "Can you carry it? It ought to start a real debate if we get it out." He stowed the hand axe and the flint point in his backpack. With nothing else to contain the bones, I dug the jacket out of my backpack, and we wrapped what we had collected in that. Derek was still not done. He found a steel tape in his backpack and measured the base of one of the columns. He had me walk straight across the circle and count my paces to get dimensions for his notes. He drew diagrams of the site. Finally, he wanted photos from outside. We left his collection piled near where we had entered and followed him back along that double trail and let him lead us out again back through the passage where it ended. The trilithon stood on a flat stone shelf. We walked out across it to the edge of that dead lava ocean. Derek took several careful shots and made us stop twice on the way back to pose with the trilithons in the background.
"Let's go!" Ram squinted into the thickening gloom. "It's getting dark."
"It is." Derek nodded at the crimson sky. "I guess we have a red giant star for a sun setting now. I wish we had time to estimate the planet's rate of rotation."
"We don't."
Ram caught his arm to hurry him, but froze between the columns, his hand raised to stop us. Ahead of him, I saw a thing out of a nightmare. Its body was narrow and long, splotched with pale green and orange. Bright metal covered most of its great head, but I saw a yellow crest like the sawtoothed crest on that huge skull. Lean, lever-like legs held it tall as some ancient saurian. It was following our footprints, its whole body tipping and tipping again to bring its huge red-glowing eyes closer to the floor. It stopped in the middle of the circle.
"Freeze!"
Ram gripped my arm. I thought the thing had seen us, but Ram was pointing at something sliding out of its armored belly, a strange chain of odd silver-bright objects clinging together. Large and tiny, they were balls and cubes, disks and cylinders, star-shaped crystals transparent as glass and shapeless gray lumps. It dangled there, twisting back and forth. A thin ray of red light shone from a crystal star at its tip. Searching the dust, it found the trail and followed it toward us. I shivered from a cold certainty that it would find us, but it stopped on Lupe's field hat. Detaching itself from the monster, it sank down into snake-like coils, glittering in the dust. After a moment, it rose again, its bright metal bits flowing into a fantastic parody of something human. Bits bunched themselves into a head, two stars glowing like alien eyes, forming arms and hands that bent to pick up Lupe's hat. It came on toward us and stopped for her sandals. Stalking closer, it found our little pile of relics and formed two more arms to gather them again in my jacket. Derek raised his camera.
"Don't,"
Ram whispered.
"Please."
The thing lumbered back to the monster. The knobby head dissolved itself into a rope that climbed back to the opening in the great body. It anchored itself there, contracted, and pulled itself and its burden out of sight. The opening closed. The monster bent its great legs, sank close to the dust, and sprang. I heard Derek's camera click, but the thing was already high, spreading stubby crimson wings. It dived straight at us, red eyes blazing. I stood fixed with dread till Ram caught my arm.
"Hide! Let's hide!"
We darted out of its path and ducked into the next trilithon. Blackness flashed. The ground rocked under me. Chapter 5. Something shoved me. My ears clicked. The ground slid under my feet. I staggered for my balance till Ram caught my arm. Bright sun blinded me. I rubbed my eyes and staggered again. Around us, that black jungle of frozen lavas was gone, but the Sahara Dunes had not returned. We stood on a wide pavement that ran straight into infinite distance. The whole circle of trilithons had vanished. A solid stone wall towered behind us now. I saw no opening at all. Still swaying from my balance, overwhelmed with the shock of too much that made no sense, I was confused, uncertain of anything. I was giddy, my stomach uneasy. Where was this? How had I gotten here? Was I sick? Had I had an accident? Groping for anything real, anything I knew, anything sane, again, I felt a homesick yearning for the easy security of the old brick house back in Portales, where I'd lived with my mother till she died. I longed for her patient smile and her gentle voice when she used to read the plays of Shakespeare to me before I was old enough for school. I needed the comfortable permanence of my father's law library, which she'd kept as he left it as long as she lived.
Will?
Ram's voice was hollow and strange in the smoke hood, but it was real.
Are you okay?
It took a moment to get enough breath to speak. I don't know. The smoke hood had a hot plastic stink. I felt weak, my orientation gone. Yet a wave of gratitude came over me. Gratitude for Ram and Derek standing close beside me, staring down that road that ran forever into hazy distance. They were fellow horsemen, old friends and loyal companions. Reality returned. The radar image, the erg and the old waterhole, the megaliths under the sand. I caught a long breath and heard Ram's startled yell.
Hey!
He turned to point. That wall! It's moving! It had been close behind us. It was now a dozen yards away, moving steadily.
Let's get back.
He went back to it. I saw no doorway, but he snatched the emerald pendant off his neck and tapped it frantically against the spot where we had come out. Nothing opened. He kept trying for half a minute, running to stay there as the pavement flowed out of the wall. Still groping for anything sane, I studied the pavement. Perhaps 30 yards wide, it was striped with the pale colors of a double rainbow, red down the center and fading through all the hues of the spectrum toward dark stripes along the sides. I felt no vibration, heard no sound of anything, but the wall pulled steadily away. Derek lifted the side of his smoke mask, sniffed, and slipped it off, breathing deep. I took mine off. The air was fresh and cool with a sweet scent of life. With better vision, I looked around again. The wall behind us was the side of a mountain, cut as smooth as if a giant's knife had sliced the rest away. It rose sheer for many hundreds of feet. Rugged mountain slopes above it climbed still higher. And sliding silently, the pavement swept us steadily into what I felt was the east, through an empty landscape. Tall green grass rippled in a gentle breeze. I saw a flight of birds, black specks wheeling far away, and a white thundercloud building over distant mountains.
Another world!
Derek caught my arm.
Let's wait for Ram!
He had fallen far behind. We ran for the edge, staggering for balance as the road slowed toward the edge, strip by strip. On the black strip along the side, the motion stopped. We stood there until Ram came down the red center strip to overtake us.
Crazy world! He was trembling, breathing hard. My little mama called it hell.
He shivered. Maybe it is.
With a warm sun shining?
Derek grinned at him.
Air we can breathe? You want gravy on your bread?
You feel good about it?
Fortunate,
Derek seemed curiously elated. We're the luckiest men alive.
Lucky?
Ram shook his head at the black mountain behind us. I don't see how.
Let's keep cool and think about it.
Derek sat down on the curb and slipped off his backpack.
Did you ever hear of serendipity?
Ram looked blank.
We've just defined it. We came here looking for rocks under the sand and stumbled into what has the look of a high-tech interstellar empire. Think of Cortez when he got to Mexico. Galileo when he saw the moons of Jupiter. I think we're luckier.
Soberly, he added, I hope we can leave a better legacy.
I don't get it.
Ram crouched away from that topless wall.
Where do you think we are?
Somewhere off the earth.
Derek paused to scan the green landscape before us.
It has to be, though a lot looks familiar. I've seen grass like this on my uncle's West Texas ranch. But how we got here...
He shook his head.
If we can't turn back, we gotta go on. The story of the trilithons could change the world if we get back with it.
And how do you hope to do that?
I have no idea,
Derek shrugged.
Let's leave that till later. Right now we've dealt ourselves a royal flush. Let's play it out. If we win the pot, it can outweigh all the gold old Pizarro found in Peru.
If we play it like a game, what's our next move?
Ride the road.
Derek shaded his eyes to stare along it into blue haze distance.
See where it takes us. Learn what we can. Look for Lupe if we ever find a clue. Get back home with proof of where we've been. Do the best we can. The pot's too big to lose.
Lupe? Ram blinked at him. Is there a chance?
We can hope.
Derek shook his head. I don't know what else. Hope and do what we can. He opened his backpack. Let's look at the cards we hold.
He laid his notebook, the camera, and a little pack of memory cards on the flat curb of the road. His canteen, a chocolate bar he'd bought when we stopped for fuel at Gabis, finally the stone hand axe and the Clovis point. And there's a sweater, a change of underwear, and two pair of socks. He grinned. I used to be a scout. All I could lay out was a bag of dried dates from Gabis.
Ram spread empty hands.
Never mind, Derek shrugged. We'll share what we have. Live off the land if we can.
He glanced up at the mountain wall, suddenly pointed.
See those green streaks?
He went back to study a fallen boulder with his pocket lens and found his camera to take a close-up shot. Back with us, he opened his notebook to make an entry in rapid shorthand.
One puzzle solved,
he nodded in satisfaction. The source of those Saharan megaliths? This mountain has the same fine grain and the same green veins. They must have been quarried here and carried out to Earth.
If we're really off the Earth,
Ram squinted at him,
where could we possibly be?
That's the big question, Derek nodded. But there are things we know, or things I think we know.
Yeah, tell me what.
First of all, the trilithons.
Frowning in speculation, he opened the notebook to write again. I saw the words, Day One, lettered above his rapid shorthand.
I think they are, or were, a sort of terminal.
He spoke the words as he wrote, as if dictating.
They seem to connect seven planets, an interstellar empire with no space rockets. The terminal world under that red sun has to be somewhere out of our solar system. The severe location is a puzzle.
The death trap, Ram muttered.
We got through, he grinned. If it was selected to limit access, we passed the test. So did your little mama. The men carrying stone axes and Clovis points weren't so lucky.
He shook his head.
I'd like to know what happened to the builders.
The Salisbury Stonehenge? I asked him. Was it another gate?
Too crude, he closed the notebook. But that's another problem for Lupe. She spoke about cultural diffusion and similar megalithic sites scattered across Western Europe. Whoever the builders were, they must have left influences, memories, myths, maybe religions.
Ram shouted.
Lupe's hat!
He pointed across the crawling pavement. I saw her field hat moving down that red central strip. Her sandals came behind it, one by one, and then the skulls and bones we had collected, still wrapped in my nylon jacket. Ram ran out to recover the jacket and brought it back to me. Squatting by the curb, he shivered and watched the hat and sandals and skulls carried on down the road and finally out of sight.
Could she be still alive? He whispered.
Could be, Derek shrugged. We'll learn what we can and do what we can.
Learn what we can, Ram was bitterly mocking, and never get back to tell anybody.
Trust our poker luck. It's running high.
Poker luck? The phrase hit me wrong. This ain't no game.
I knew better, but ain't said how I felt. Ram was not so bitter. He sat for a time in moody silence and abruptly spoke again.
I can't help thinking of home.
He paused to sigh. Last summer I went back to see my kin in Mombasa and Nairobi. They're in a bad way. Bad government, poverty, sickness. Not much I could do for them. But I met a woman. I saw the shadow of a smile.
At Daliki Museum, we got to talking. She was white, but color didn't bother her. She let me buy her a beer. She was born in South Africa, trained in biology at Cambridge, now employed by a big pharmaceutical outfit in Switzerland. She was there with a tour group, anxious to learn more than the guides could tell her. Her company was testing an AIDS vaccine, and she wanted to see more of the need for it. She let me show her around the city and translate for her. We got on well. She left her group, and we spent 2 weeks together. His smile grew wider. Weeks I won't forget. We took a camera safari through the Masai Mara. We climbed Kilimanjaro.
We rode a hot air balloon over to Serengeti. 2 wonderful weeks, over in a minute. Riley, he shrugged. I hated to let her go, but she had to get back to her job in the new vaccine. I had to get home and finish my doctorate. We promised to get together when we could. Maybe try to do something for Africa. But now, the wistful smile evaporated. I'll never see her again.
You might. Derek grinned and clapped his shoulder. Look on the bright side. If we do get back with all I hope we might, who knows what we can do? For Africa. For all the world. He nodded at the road. Let's get moving.
Not so fast. Ram shook his head. You're a dreamer. But let's get real. The things that built the trilithons on the road may have been great engineers, but they have to be dead. I don't want to meet what killed them. Before we get too far off, I want to look for tickets back home. We looked. On either side of the road, the sliced-off mountain rose sheer from the grass. We took off the oxygen gear and left the heavy cylinders on the sidewalk, piled against the curb and covered with the smoke hoods. We went north. Ram tramped ahead along the wall, searching for any opening. Derek studied rocks and plants and the whole landscape. We found no break in the slick black stone. 2 or 3 miles out, we came to the end of the wall, our path blocked by great piles of fallen scree, with rough boulder slopes above. The grass gave way to thorny thickets with no hint of any opening. The sun was down behind the mountain before we got back to the road. I felt hungry and tired, but Ram led us stubbornly across the road to search in the other direction. All we found was that topless barrier of dark, emerald-veined stone, its seamless surface hardly marred by all the ages it must have been exposed.
10,000 years? Derek narrowed his eyes, speculating. Or 100,000? I'd like to know.
Night had fallen. We picked our way back to the road by flashlight and tried to sleep on the grass beside it. For me, it was a night of misery that seemed to last forever. I shivered with cold and ached in every joint. My shins itched where brush had scratched them. Insects crawled on me and sometimes bit. I felt ashamed to complain. Derek lay on his back, happy with what he saw in the sky. The stars seemed brighter than I remembered, the constellations strange. He found something he thought might be the Pleiades, though smaller and far to the south.
We're many thousands of light-years from Earth.
And that seemed to elate him.
Farther than any conceivable spacecraft could go.
Too far. Ram's voice was a croak in the dark. We'd no way back. A strange half-moon hung at the zenith, far brighter and 3 or 4 times larger than any moon on Earth. Never moving, it grew. By midnight, it was an enormous disk, so bright that Derek could see to find his notebook and set his observations down. It was ice white at the poles, most of it blue, patched here and there with brown and green, scattered with wisps of hazy white, he said were clouds.
It's no actual moon at all, he was excited with discovery. I think we're on a double planet, both members Earth-like. You see the ice caps? The blue would be water, the green, vegetation, that big brown spot could be another Sahara.
If it's a planet, Ram asked, why doesn't it move?
Well, the rotations of both are caught in a tidal lock, the way our own moon is. They rotate as a unit, the same faces always together. Now, at midnight here, the sun is shining past us to make it noon on the sister planet. If I'm right, we'll see it eclipsed when the shadow of ours moves across it.
We saw the eclipse. The shadow bit into that enormous disk and slowly swallowed it. Derek jotted another observation as its light grew dim and stowed the little book in his backpack. I shivered and tried to find a fit for my body in the rough ground under me. I'm freezing, Ram muttered in the dark. I wish we'd never seen the damn trilithons.
The sun will rise and warm us up, Derek promised him. We're alive, with a royal flush to play. I feel like Marco Polo did when he got to China.
Okay, he muttered. We'll ride the road. It's the only chance I see.
Chapter 6 Ram and Derek stood over me when I woke, their backpacks on. Ready for the road? Derek was calling.
Cup of hot coffee was all I felt ready for after the long night on that hard bed. But we had no coffee. I slung my pack on and stumbled after them to the wide red strip at the middle of the pavement. It swept us steadily toward the rising sun into the unknown east. The road was moving faster, maybe 20 or 30 miles an hour. I shivered in the wind of it. The mountain shrank behind us to a thick, black stump. The core of a long, extinct volcano, Derek called it. It gave no hint of the trilithon somehow hidden inside or beyond it. I stared back at it, wistful for any way back to Eastern, back to my old brown brick on First Street and the library of English literature that I had spent so many years collecting. Bram squatted on the pavement, rubbing at the birthmark on his forehead. Uneasily, he pulled the emerald pendant out of his shirt and squinted at the crown of worlds above the hieroglyphic script. "Strange," he muttered. "The mark has been itching ever since we come true." He frowned at Derek. "What could that mean?" Derek shrugged. "Quien sabe," Lupe would say. He shaded his eyes, scanning the landscape ahead. Tall grass covered the flats. Green trees were clumped on the hills and along the streams. It might have been somewhere in eastern Kansas before the settlers arrived with axe and plow. "Don't let the unexpected get you down," he turned to grin at Ram. "Think of Marco Polo on the Silk Road into China 900 years ago. He discovered a vast and ancient empire unknown to Europe. The Chinese had invented paper, printing, the magnetic compass, gunpowder. He learned a lot and came back rich." "How long was he gone?" 24 years. Derek looked back at the mountain. "But we're moving faster than his ships and horses did." He raised his camera for a shot of the mountain behind us and turned to get another of a waterhole we were passing. Stilt-legged flamingos were feeding in it, and animals were filing in to drink. I recognized warthogs, impalas, and zebras. Half a dozen elephants ambled toward it behind a long, tusked bull. A dark-maned lion lay watching from a little hillock. Far off, a giraffe was grazing the top of a tree. Derek opened his notebook and asked Ram to identify a few animals he didn't know. High-shouldered wildebeest, eland, a long-horned Thompson's gazelle. "That could be Kenya, if I saw Kilimanjaro." He shivered and blinked at Derek. "Are we crazy?" "Not quite," Derek said. "We're explorers, with wonders to explore." Ram turned to stare at a strange tree standing alone on a rocky hill. Its trunk was enormously thick, the branches gnarled and bare, a vulture perching in them. "A baobab," he muttered, "like those at home. How did it get here?"
"I want to know." Derek took a shot of the tree. "We've simply hit a motherload of problems with a grand chance to look for answers."
Ram waved at the waterhole in the tree. "If this isn't Earth, how do you answer those?"
"We're still looking."
Derek shrugged and reached for his notebook. "Evolution does create similar forms to fill similar niches, but it doesn't repeat itself. Not so exactly as this could be." He shrugged. "Could be they got here from Earth the way we did."
Ram blinked at him. "Brought by men from Earth?"
"Not likely." He shook his head. "Nobody on the early Earth was skipping around the galaxy or building roads like this." Derek opened the notebook and made a quick entry. Ram stood frowning at the baobab and the animals around the waterhole till they were gone behind it.
"Angalia!"
He gasped and pointed. Looking, I found one of those giant hoppers in the sky above the mountain, red wings spread, gliding down toward us. Sunlight flashed on its great silver head. It landed on the pavement a mile behind us, crouched, and jumped again. In panic to hide, I started toward the curb. Derek raised his camera. On the center strip, they pulled ahead of me.
"Come on," Ram called back. "It has us if it wants us."
I stepped back on the red strip and ran to overtake them. We stood watching. The hopper jumped and jumped again, landing a few hundred yards behind us. It sank to the pavement and crouched there, watching us. Derek walked a little toward it to take another shot.
"Come back," Ram whispered. "Please."
He took the shot and came back to us.
"We need a record,"
he grinned at Ram. "Hasn't hurt us yet." It sat there, never moving. The road swept us on through flat green plains and deep cuts in wooded hills. Overhead the moon was a long silver blade that shrank and disappeared.
An eclipse on the other planet.
Derek frowned at his watch and nodded in satisfaction.
Lost in the shadow of ours. The crescent should come back reversed.
He watched the sky until it did.
Ah, it's a useful observation.
He scribbled some quick calculation.
The shadow shows that the two planets are nearly the same size. We know from the gravity that they're about the size of Earth. The Trinathon builders must have looked a long time to find this system.
Saving food and water, we fasted till sunset. The hopper did better for itself. It soared off the strip, vanished over a wooded ridge, and came back with a full-grown wildebeest kicking in its claws. Back near us, it ripped its prey apart with metal jaws and devoured it. Skin, bones, and guts. I heard a deep humming from it, which rose and fell and finally ceased.
"It looks half-machine," Derek said, "and acts half-alive."
"Alive or not," Ram muttered, "I don't like it watching us."
"We're watching it, too."
Derek dug into his pack for a tiny tube that was both microscope and telescope. He focused it on the creature for half a minute.
"Nature never made that thing."
He shook his head. "I want to know what it is, how it got created, and what it did with Lupe." He studied the creature again, while a thin chain of glittering geometric bits came out of its underbelly to clean the blood from its bright metal face and crawled back again. Nervous under its fixed stare, we drank a few swallows from what was left in our canteens. Cooler than I was, Derek broke 3 equal pieces off his chocolate bar. I counted out 5 dried dates for each of us, but ate with little appetite, my mouth so dry I had a drink again. Darkness fell. The hopper shuffled closer, but stopped again. Its huge black eyes became red headlamps fixed on us. In spite of that merciless glare, Derek said we must take turns sleeping, with one man awake to watch. The pavement seemed smoother and warmer than the bare ground had been. I dozed, and woke from nightmares of the hopper ripping off our limbs. Derek stayed awake most of the night, watching sunlight creep across the seas and land masses of our sister world, and longing for the binoculars we had left in our tent in the Urg. The great moon grew so bright that the hopper dimmed its headlamps. They blazed again when the shadow of our world eclipsed it. Derek looked at his watch and announced that the double planet's day, measured from eclipse to eclipse, was a little less than 20 hours. The last time I woke, the sun had risen and the hopper was gone. Derek stood with his pocket telescope scanning the road ahead.
"Something odd." He gave Ram the telescope. "See what you think."
Ram stared. "It looks like the tops of 2 big black marbles, one of them half buried on each side of the road." He shrugged and gave me the glass. "A crazy world."
It took me a moment to focus the little instrument. The road ran straight toward a mountain ridge ahead. I saw eroded cliffs and steep boulder slopes scattered with pine-like evergreens, but no black marbles.
"Lower," Derek said. "Look at the gap."
I found 2 brown domes, each streaked with a narrow black mark from the ground to the top. They were identical and huge, the road a thin line between them. I shook my head and handed back the telescope. He put it in his pocket and reached for his camera. As we glided on, the objects grew as tall as the hills beyond them. Their sheer dark walls closed in on us, blotting out the morning sun. The road swept us through the gloomy canyon between them. Derek picked up his pack when we were back in sunlight. "Let's get off."